For this?
Yes, we can. Daryl, hang tight for 1 second. Just hang tight for a second. We'll get a time here.
Okay. Do we want to do that first? We
if don't that's need okay, yeah.
scheduling on the internet.
Yeah, just can we schedule a special meeting today immediately following this meeting for a one thing that we needed to notice?
Yes.
That's
I'm
okay
with
that.
Randy? So then let's schedule it for 2:45.
Or even, yeah, sure, that's fine.
2:45.
Can you let Mike know too, Daryl? Thank you, guys.
All righty. Well, good afternoon. This is Julie Fedorchak. We are on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for an informal hearing on case number PU-15-661, Otter Tail Power Company's 2015 transmission facility cost recovery rates. I do not have any opening comments. Commissioner Christman, do you?
I had some very formal comments.
Got to turn your mic.
But since I was the one that was a little bit late, I'll just forget about it.
Scrap the speech. Okay, then I'll turn over to the portfolio holder, Commissioner Culp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The what we have today, I guess, is we've had the transmission cost recovery rider in place for a while, and this is, of course, the true-up for this year. And Otter Tail has a presentation I believe they want to cover, as well as Jerry and Jack might offer some staff comments. The one thing I would say is that I think the three of us have talked about it, get a renewed, I don't know what the best word is here, it's a renewed concern, but get the increased awareness of just what our customers are paying in transmission costs, whether it's Otter Tail or Xcel with MDU, and the things that might be going on as SPP is now in the game, and there's Otter Tail's got things that are going on with them. So I think that's why I think it's appropriate to have the informal today so we can get a little more detail. And I reviewed this case, and I really don't have any concerns with what Otter Tail is proposing this year, but I wanted to make sure that we keep the discussion going because these transmission riders are becoming a bigger and bigger bill impact. I mean, we look at this is over a couple bucks a month that customers are paying, and we this morning just had a very heated discussion. I shouldn't say heated, very thorough discussion about an increase of $2 a month that took us 7 months to go through in a rate case. So, you know, we've got a transmission rider that's more than that. So I think that's, to me, why we're doing this. And I guess that's from there. I'd turn it over to the company if that's all right.
Sounds good. So I guess the floor is yours to walk through your proposal.
All right. Thank you, commissioners. My name is Stuart Tomerdahl with Otter Tail. And maybe what we'll do, just for the record, we'll have everybody from our team introduce themselves, and then we'll get started.
Bryce Haugen, rates analyst.
Jason Wires, manager of delivery planning.
Al Kakritz, I'm the manager of project management.
Kerry Stephenson, associate general counsel.
Got to be one attorney, right?
Got to be.
Jack, keep an eye on him.
First of all, again, thank you for the opportunity for us to be here today. I just have a couple of brief comments. Our goal today is, again, just to reorientate you to our transmission rider and really just kind of highlight some of the key elements that are in this year's update. And then, you know, really the last thing is just to reiterate, you know, the mechanism, there isn't anything that has changed in the mechanism. It's the same as what's been in place for, you know, the preceding few years. And so it's just a number of updates and a couple different new unique items that are starting to roll in. But I'll turn it over to Bryce, and he'll kind of kick off the presentation, and the rest will follow. So.
So today we have the transmission cost recovery rider after visiting with Mr. Lean about the items that we should discuss in detail today. We have an agenda here that kind of cover the background information when the rider started, what all goes into an annual filing that we do, the calculation of the recovery mechanism. From there, we have an update on three of the existing projects that are included in the rider. Mr. Kakritz will cover those. And then we have a couple of additional, some new items that Mr. Wires will cover for us here today. In addition to that, we have the MISO ROE, that complaint. We have a little bit to discuss on that item. And then finally, just the total request, the summary of what's requested in the initial filing. So first, the background on the rider. The first rates for this rider went into effect in May of 2012. And the first update after that, it was decided that the updates should be filed by September 1 each year, so that the recovery period would be the following calendar year. The new rates would go into effect January 1 of the following year. And so the filing that was made August 31st that would be the fourth update, and we proposed the rates to be implemented January 1 of 16. Here's the next slide is just kind of some background on what happens, what occurs in an initial filing. What we've done is we go through and update the actual costs from the prior year. We update actual costs from what was forecasted. We also include the upcoming recovery period, so that would be the 2016 year for the existing projects. And so that helps provide a true-up, which prevents any over or under-recovery, so that the company is recovering what we should be recovering in the rider. We also include some of the new items. In this case, we have the Rugby to Harvey 115 item that we've proposed or requested for inclusion. Mr. Wires will kind of cover that, as well as the SPP charges that Otter Tail expects that we might incur with our portion of our load that'll be subject to that. So that's kind of what happens in an initial filing.
Bryce, I don't remember this exactly, but do we ever envision this being a static number, or a static situation where we won't do this every year? We would roll it into a rate case?
Right, yes, that would be, if when a rate case happened, if the projects were all in service, then those would all roll into a rate.
But is there a value to keep it out there after a rate case because you're still building?
Right. I think leaving it open would be appropriate. One of the questions getting into a rate case is if the schedule, MISO schedules, would roll into the base rates as well, or maybe those, it might be more appropriate to keep those in the TCR since they do fluctuate on an annual basis.
Just a question for down the road, because that's where I don't know if these things will ever go away. I'd like to get them into base rates, but then with all the fluctuation that is always going to happen, it seems like maybe we have to do this every year, but just want to get your thoughts on that.
Sure. Any other questions on the initial filing or what kind of goes into that? The drivers for the expansion, which you guys are aware of, but have seen before, but we maintain system reliability through these projects, increase the market efficiency, and then these projects are also done to support current and future regional generation resource development and supporting a variety of generation policies.
This is where the supportive variety of generation policies, this is where I have a problem with SPP. When they start saying these social needs policies are starting to develop in their planning process, you guys aren't drinking that Kool-Aid, are you? When we talk about generation policies, that's not a clean power plan description that we're going to build stuff to meet those kind of needs. It's based on your current need, not what a new policy change might be. You're nodding your heads, but I want to make sure you guys say that.
Yes.
Because that's a big concern right now. You've got changes in these RTOs that are defining projects to meet social need. Okay.
Sure.
You're not doing that?
No.
All right. Thank you.
Social desire might be a better word than need.
Social desire. Okay, good point. But I'm serious about that, because that could become a big sticking contention with me if we start building transmission that doesn't meet a real hard need of what your customers have to meet some social need that, anyway.
A different subject on this slide. You're done.
Absolutely.
Explain a short explanation of increased market efficiency.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Maybe Jason, if you'd take
sure. When we think about market efficiency, we think about the price of energy, and as we build more transmission, we have access to lower cost generation. So generally, as the higher voltage transmission facilities are built, there's an ability to lower energy prices by having that energy transportable across a larger footprint.
So why should I ever have to worry about that being added on as a rider? And this is what drives me nuts with so many of these efficiency things. We're doing this to save money, so here's how much more money we need. No, if it's actually a savings, then I shouldn't even know about it.
Yeah, I think the key on this slide is just indicating what types of things drive transmission projects, and the transmission projects then flow through these riders when applicable. So it's the
if they really are about efficiency, then they shouldn't really be a factor, unless we're calling things efficiency just because they're modern and cool, but they really don't provide as much efficiency as what they cost. Then we would need to add that.
Sure, right. Yeah, perhaps a better word would have been savings, increased market savings, or you know, better economics across the RTO, footprint. Right. Yeah.
The following slide, we have a list of the projects that are included in this year's filing. The first 14 projects are projects that were previously approved, and the 15th project listed there is the Rugby to Harvey 115 line. The column listed as share just indicates whether it's a OTP-only project or if it's built with another utility. The type that we have there, projects fall under either a reliability, generation, or a multi-value distinction designation. And then the project budget for all investors is listed here, as well as the 2016 revenue requirement that we've included in the filing for this. So the 2016 revenue requirement in North Dakota for the for these projects is about $6.4 million.
To Rugby to Harvey, that's not anything you shared with Central Power, obviously, because you said shared. No, I mean they don't.
That's correct. That's an OTP only project.
Could that have been one in the past that may have been something you worked with them on, since that's a co-op area there too?
Yeah, actually, this particular project, which we'll get into a little more detail, is looking to improve an existing line that's currently owned by Otter Tail.
Okay.
I didn't get the pleasure of being part of the CapEx hearings, but I thought that whole thing, I thought the CapEx itself was a multi-value project. But I see two segments of it are listed as reliability. So was I incorrect about that? That's not all categorized as multi-value?
Right. The four projects as part of Group 1, there's three reliability projects, one MVP. The Brookings to Hampton or Brookings Twin Cities project was the only MVP or multi-value project. The Fargo project was a reliability project. The Bemidji project was reliability. And lastly, the La Crosse project is also a reliability project. So there's three reliability projects, one MVP in that first portfolio of CapEx projects.
Thank you.
The numbers listed on this slide correspond to the following slide, which is a map of where the projects are located. You see the majority of the projects are located in North Dakota. And the blue stars there just designate the projects that have been previously approved, and then the Rugby to Harvey line, number 15 in red there, is the line that we're requesting to include in this year's filing.
Can you remind me again what the breakout is between North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota when you figure out your costs, when you spread them out?
Rough rule of thumb is like a 50% Minnesota, 40% North Dakota, 10% South Dakota.
Okay.
That's just, you know, real general.
And the Zazra, what's the North Dakota customer number or meter number?
What are we, 40 some thousand total customers. Yeah.
Have you gone in front of Minnesota and South Dakota yet in this?
We made the transmission cost recovery the rider filing in Minnesota October 1, and then South Dakota was just made okay. November 1. Yeah. On the next slide, we just have a list of the expected in-service dates for these projects. Probably when Al visits about the three, these are might be very firm, but could fluctuate a little bit depending on the construction, things that come up in construction. So these are just expected at this time when the in-service dates would be for the projects. And now I'll have...
So no, wait, there, which ones aren't in service again? Because I know CapEx is in service. Right, so that which ones are not in service?
Not in service entirely would be the CapEx Brookings, okay. Brookings to Hampton, Big Stone area, Big Stone to Ellendale, Castleton to Buffalo.
Okay.
Oaks area transmission is expected to wrap up by the end of this year. NERC would be near the end of Q3 next year.
Okay.
And then finally, the Rugby to Harvey, the one that we've requested for inclusion this year, would be 2021 time frame.
Okay.
All right. So a brief update on a couple of projects here, primarily because we've noted some changes in the estimates for the project since our last filing. The first project is our Castleton to Buffalo project. That actually... has been an ongoing project for a few years now. It encompasses an upgrade at the Buffalo 345 substation and then the upgrade from Buffalo to Castleton. We built a new 115 line between those two facilities. And then we had an upgrade of the 115 line from Mapleton Mapleton to Cheyenne. So all of this is a kind of a portfolio of a group of projects there that we title Castleton to Buffalo. Again, it was a project or a group of projects to improve reliability in that Castleton area there, primarily, as mentioned, upgrading some facilities to 115 and then increasing the capacity there.
So in the first one, when the Courtenay Wind Interconnection, doesn't Courtenay have to pay the interconnection upgrade costs?
Yeah, I was just going to speak to how Courtenay impacts this project. So what is happening there is when back in the day when the 345 system was built, there were a set of transformers that were purchased, 112 MVA transformers. Two were put in at Jamestown. One was put in Buffalo, and they were essentially matching units. Now, the Courtenay Wind Farm that's interconnecting to the Jamestown 345 substation has caused us to increase the transformer sizes there. So the two transformers that went in at Jamestown are going to get replaced with two new transformers. That's going to allow us to take an existing transformer at Jamestown and move it over to Buffalo to enhance our Buffalo system there.
How does the money flow then? Does Xcel pay money to you? How do you make that all work since the generator pays those upgrades?
Yep, so on the transformer, in this project itself, it's broken down, and Jason is well involved with this with myself. But the generator will pay for the interconnection facilities, and we are intending to pay for the network upgrades and collect that over the long term. So we'll, in fact, buy the new transformers there that will get placed at Jamestown, and then the existing transformer we will just transfer over to Jamestown. And the cost of that transformer is already in our rates, and so it won't be included as additional project cost at Buffalo. Okay. So overall, that was, you know, kind of the highlight of that of the change here, and that is the ability to upgrade the 345 side of that Buffalo substation along with the 115 portion as well, improving the reliability of that that whole system there, dual transformers for parallel capacity instead of just one transformer in the long term. So we see that as a benefit for reliability for the system out there. Actually, the price of the project we expect will be a little bit lower than what we had anticipated. And as Bryce has noted, you know, because of some load ratio pricing zone changes, the cost of the North Dakota customers goes up.
So why did that ratio change? Less customers somewhere else? Do you guys have, I mean, how did that practically play out? Zone one stuff, right?
I'll have to pass that back to our pricing zone guys.
Yeah. Within Otter Tail's pricing zone, we have Otter Tail load, GRE load, Missouri River Energy Services has load, and so does Xcel Energy. So as the allocation is made through the MISO process to the Otter Tail pricing zone, it's dependent on the loads of each entity. In this situation, I think what's happened is Otter Tail's load has become a larger portion of the overall pricing zone. That's why the allocation has slightly.
But it's not shifts in how MISO's doing between zones. It's all stuff you guys agree with, nothing that we've talked about before with potential arguments coming down the road.
That's correct. This is just basically effectuating the cost allocation that was put in place back in 2010 when this was approved. Yep.
So Xcel should be coming back saying they've got less share, so they should be less money?
That's what
somebody should, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Jason, is that 51.02% number that I was seeing? Retail share is
falls up to 52.
Yep.
So that's the update for the Castle and Buffalo area projects. The next slide we have here is our Big Stone to Brookings project. As you are well aware, a project that we're working together with Xcel on. Xcel is, again, the lead on the project, and we work closely with them, but they are the lead of the utility here. Overall, we're expecting right now that the price of the project is going to decrease some for Otter Tail Power. This project is a co-investment in the line itself, which is from the Big Stone South 345 sub 2 Brookings, and then each utility invests their own shares in their substation facilities. So at Big Stone, we're expanding the substation at the plant, the 230 substation at the plant. We have a couple miles of parallel 230 line that we're building on our own, and then our Big Stone South 345,000-volt substation. So those are our own costs, and then we share the cost of the line itself. Overall, as we look at that, we believe that our costs are going to be more in about the $106 million range. We originally anticipated approximately $133 million. So we'll continue to watch that. The good part about this is our substation will get done approximately in the next year or 15 months or so. So we'll have some firm prices on that, and then we'll continue to watch the construction on the line itself. So right now, Xcel is self-performing the work on the foundations. It's a single-pole 345 structure. They're doing the concrete foundations themselves, and then we're working on the selection for the transmission erection stringing contractor. So we haven't quite got to that yet. Yep, so we'll co-own the line as tenants in common, Xcel and others. 50-50, yep. The last project we had is a project we've been working on for a period of time down at Oaks. Kind of started in 2010, late 2010, early 2011, kind of a multi-phase project down there. And again, it's really a reliability project for that area of Oaks. Our 40,000 system is what we use to serve most of the customers in that area. As we got to town of Oaks, got a little bit weak there with some other sources that might get fed into the area. So the strong source was from Oaks, our Oaks 230 sub, about 8 miles out of town. If that line or the system there got lost or interrupted, it was a weak system to carry the Oaks area. Because of that, then we undertook this project to build a new line approximately 9 miles from that substation up to Oaks. That's the 40,000 line. And then we expanded the 40,000 side of that substation so we could get some additional breakers in there. We moved a parallel transformer out there. So now we have two 41.6 kV transformers at that location, and then we installed 230 kV breakers. Prior to that, it was fed straight through from Foreman to Ellendale, and there wasn't anything to relay the 230,000-volt line there. I'm sorry.
Practicality, how do you figure that out? It must be, I mean, how do, what makes something, how do you, what caused you to say, hey, we need a reliability project? And I've heard this before, but walk
Jason
through it again.
Causes us to do that. So it's our plan. Our planners do a lot of that. So,
but I mean, what's the trigger there? Because it's I just always try to understand that better.
Right. Sure. When we do a system studies, we look at the adequacy of the system for both system intact and contingency conditions. In this particular situation, if we lost the oak source, we had a hard time carrying the remaining load from Jamestown, which was our next adjacent source.
Okay.
So to find a way to address that issue, we've identified the need for a project here at Oaks. Where
does there have to be a certain amount of customers that are at play for this?
It's all based on the voltage and loading performance of the transmission system. We have criteria that we need to maintain to keep the lights on for our customers. If we violate that criteria, whether it's a voltage criteria.
All NERC criteria that you have to comply with, and that's the big trigger, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
So is there always the next one and the next one and the next one? If you had this one done, you'd immediately bring up the next weakest link?
Not necessarily. We're constantly evaluating the system on an annual basis per the NERC standards, and only when we find a problem would we initiate a new project.
So Jason, you plan for the biggest single contingency for the system.
That's correct.
The system has to be able to keep running if that contingency happens.
That's correct.
But if you lose a big load, let's say you plant something in Oaks and you lose a big load all of a sudden, a big business leaves, you could have a project you don't need once the business leaves.
That's a risk as well.
Yeah. That's not happening in Oaks, though, right? That JA whatever lifts is still going to stick around for a while?
Plus, there's a new grain elevator going in at Verona, which is nearby.
Okay. Because so. I think wasn't that a big driver of it, some of those businesses down there?
So, you know, we've kind of hit on the majority of what's going on at Oaks. We did do some estimates. They were actually went back to the early 2010, 2011 timeframe, as I mentioned. Kind of as we refreshed our pricing and as we found some issues related to the soil, high water table made it difficult to just do some direct embed structures. We needed some culverts and a few things that way. The substation property was a really constrained property. There's the Garrison diversion, all the pipes and the water system in the ground down there made us adjust some of our initial plans. So overall, you know, the bottom line is we needed another $600,000 to complete that project, and we're thankful that that the facility's in service and working well for us, and it's going to serve us well in the long term there. So unless there's any other questions, I think Jason's going to take on the upcoming projects.
All right, we have one new transmission project in this year's filing. It's a new one. It's a new project that involves the existing 115 line between Rugby and Harvey. This particular line is about 50 miles long, and our plan here is to rebuild certain sections of that line each year for the next 6 years. When we go in to rebuild this line, we'll be using Otter Tail's updated structures, a new construction standard that will now include a shield wire on top of the poles to help mitigate lightning-induced outages. So we hope that we can eliminate these breaker operations we've been experiencing on this line due to these lightning strikes. This is a multi-year project, as I mentioned. We'll be targeting the worst sections first. We plan to spend about $250,000 per year and wrap up the project in 2021 for a total cost around $1.5 million. Slide 14.
Does this, I'm sorry,
go ahead.
I'm still back on that Rugby to Harvey. Is any of that the infrastructure that's tangled up in the SPP cost sharing scenario in this project?
This particular line is going to actually connect one, the Rugby end is expected to be an SPP substation. The Harvey end is expected to be a MISO substation. So yes, this is a line that is essentially on the seam between the two RTOs. Yes. slide 14. I want to touch on two new expense items related in our filing for this year. These are a result of Southwest Power Pool's footprint expanding north into the Dakotas area. These new transmission expenses that we're expecting are really a result of two events. The first and foremost, Central Power is planning to integrate into SPP as a transmission owner on January 1st of 2016. And secondly, we have an existing transmission agreement with Central Power that's been in place since 1958. That is set to expire at the end of this year, also changing the usage rights of our joint system within our overlapping service territory. Slide 15 talks about this first new expense that we expect in 2016 as a result of the relationship we have with Central Power. It's related to SPP Schedule 9. If you consider Central's integration into SPP along with the expiration of our legacy contract with Central, currently, as we've looked at this joint transmission system, we've allowed each other to use our transmission systems on a reciprocal basis. We have used their system. They have used our system to serve their load, and that's really helped us over the long run.
If he's around, we should have Vic in here, too. I forgot about that. He's our SPP guy.
Okay.
But anyway, keep rolling. Thanks, Jack.
So historically, we've used each other's system, and we've found ways to handle the equities among our joint system through this existing transmission contract. Once that contract expires at the end of this year and the integration of Central into SPP, usage rights on our joint transmission system will really be administered by the respective RTOs. For Otter Tail load that may be served from transmission facilities under SPP, we are expected to incur new Schedule 9 expenses that will essentially compensate SPP transmission owners for our use of their transmission system. As you look at the estimates we've assembled to look at our rate impact for 2016, our increase in cost for SPP exposure is estimated to be about $3.9 million. On the flip side, with the contract going away, Central Power load will also be subjected to additional MISO expenses as well, and they will similarly face a Schedule 9 expense from MISO, and those expenses that they incur are really meant to compensate Otter Tail for their use of our transmission system as they serve their loads absent this transmission contract. If you consider the new revenues that Otter Tail will get as a result of Central's payments to MISO, we're expecting roughly $1.8 million in additional revenues that will start also upon the expiration of this contract. If you look at the net of the incremental SPP expenses and the new revenues through MISO Schedule 9, you'll notice that the net impact to Otter Tail is roughly $2.1 million that we expect here within 2016. I will point out on slide 15, these numbers on this slide are different than what was included in the filing, but we have a table in a future slide here comparing what we knew for the filing in August versus what we know now as we stand here on November 4th.
So relate me again to how this discussion goes with our, which we can talk about, with the current discussion with SPP and the FERC and all that. Is that what you're trying to hit highlight here, or that's another piece to this?
The current docket is not reflected in this particular filing.
Okay, this is not all encompassing. It was my point I wanted to get out. This is the known right now, and it more than likely will be more than this.
This is the known of what we know today. And let me just state that the estimates included here are essentially reflective of applying tariff service absent any other type of settlement. So if Otter Tail's faced with taking SPP service per their tariff, this is what our expected bill.
This is the worst case scenario?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not a pancaking of what we're doing in that discussion with this.
It would be a pancake. Yeah. So we have our existing MISO
cost. Wait a minute. If this is the worst case scenario, it can't be a pancake.
You've already assumed what you just said and what we heard anyway, was that you assumed that we would take the tariff rate.
Tariff service, yep.
Yep. And so you allocated it that way. You calculated it that way. So you've covered those costs at the worst-case scenario.
Correct.
It could be less than that, but it won't be, oh, we didn't calculate anything in there, and so it'll be this plus whatever else is added.
That is correct.
Okay.
So this is worst case.
Okay.
Yes.
Not pancake. There's not going to be another pancake layered on top of this of costs.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there was a number that I saw earlier for Schedule 7, 8, 9, and 11 that added up to about 1.9 million. Yeah. Is that number less now than that? You guys have 150,000.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it is slightly less, and we'll cover that on slide 17 here. Yep.
And while we're talking about this, I should mention that Central Power filed their intent to join on Friday, this last Friday, the 30th of October. And so
Randy, turn your mic on. We're
Central Power filed their filing with FERC to join SPP on October 30th, and that filing now will be open for interventions and so forth through, I think it's November 18th or something like that, and so we're just now looking at that, and we may be recommending an intervention in that. Our position being that Central Power, that Otter Tail should be held harmless from Central Power's joining. So if we could win on that, this would go away.
That's correct. That's correct.
Well, but to be candid, though, it's not quite that easy, because whether they would have joined SPP or not, your relationship with Central was expiring. So you had to renegotiate that. So I don't want to put it all on the back of them joining SPP, to be fair.
That's partly correct, but
it was expiring, though. Whether they joined SPP, had to renegotiate.
But I do understand that the amount of revenue in that contract was only about $100,000.
That's correct.
So. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. I think the picture would be much, much different if Central would have joined MISO.
Sure.
So I think, in all fairness, SPP's decision, the movement to SPP is a much larger impact on our customers.
Fair enough. So what numbers do you have in the filing that gets us to what we noticed the proposed increase? Is that, you said there were some number changes? You'll get to that? Okay.
All right. Slide 17. But first I'll touch on slide 16. A smaller item here, but worthy of mentioning. Second new expense that we've included in our filing is for SPP Schedule 11. As we correlate the SPP tariff to the MISO tariff, Schedule 11 in SPP is equivalent to MISO's Schedule 26 or 26A. That's really stemming from regional transmission projects with either economic or reliability benefits. Otter Tail's current estimates of Schedule 11 expenses due to our load in SPP is estimated to be around $92,000 in 2016. Again, these numbers are our best estimate at this time. And as we flip to slide 17, I can illustrate the differences between our initial filing we made in late August versus what we currently know today with the information we've gathered. Conversations are still ongoing with the parties as we look at how things may shake out starting January 1st. As time has passed over the last month or so, we have gathered additional information that has resulted in refreshed estimates for Otter Tail's impacts related to SPP Schedule 9 and Schedule 11. You'll see on this particular slide a comparison of what was in our initial filing, which had a net revenue requirement around $1.1 million, Jerry, the number you referenced earlier. It turns out that in that initial filing, we missed the consideration of the additional revenues coming in from the central load paying the MISO tariff. And we've also refreshed our Schedule 9 expense and Schedule 9 expense estimates based on better interpretation of the SPP tariff. So our current estimates are showing a revenue requirement for North Dakota of around $900,000, and that compares to the $1.1 million that was included in our initial filing. Now, as I mentioned previously, we still are in the midst of conversations with these parties, and the numbers are somewhat fluid. Through the transmission cost recovery process, there is an opportunity to true up our differences between the forecast and the actuals. And to the extent that these numbers don't change a whole lot going forward, Otter Tail would just prefer to do a true-up filing as part of next year's filing, or if they do change dramatically, we could certainly file a supplemental addendum to the existing filing if that's the direction that the commission would like us to go with here.
Wasn't that about a 15% change, reduction, just beer math? What you asked for 1.1, isn't that, it's at least 10% decrease. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, primarily related to the new MISO revenues coming in there.
Why would we give you 10, 15% more than you need?
Because it's Christmas.
Yeah, well, fine. We need to deliberate, but it wouldn't be that hard to make the change, would it?
I could mention that we noticed it. I don't know if we need to renotice or anything, if we give a different number, but the way the notice reads, it gives a number of what it's going to be.
Sure, that was a proposed notice, but we can get to that at the work session, but we could certainly deliberate down.
So maybe we could. Another
you can cross that bridge down the road.
Another thought is that our true-up account from last year was $400,000-some balance at the end of the year that we were short. So we're looking at a $200,000 difference here. Those are the kind of numbers that we're playing with in that tracking account.
Okay.
And I think, you know, in all fairness of the ongoing conversations, I think that's a topic we wanted to touch on later regarding a future work session and a commission meeting on this, because if the estimates do change dramatically from what's shown here, it might make sense to do a supplemental just to get the numbers in line. Mm-hmm.
And we think that's coming soon, based on our discussion Vic and I had last couple weeks ago. Okay.
So if it gets too far out of whack, you can end up with some interest payments that are high.
Is that the technical term, Jerry, too far out of whack? All right, good.
Yep.
Speaking my lingo.
Engineering language again.
I'll move on to slide 18 here. To mitigate the incremental otter tail exposure to these new SPP expenses, we have identified three new transmission projects in the 2016-2017 timeframe that could eliminate these new SPP expenses. As you'll notice on this slide, we've identified three substation projects that will add up to roughly $13.5 million. These substation projects are near Rowlett, Rugby, and Voltaire, or in the Minot area. And what these projects will allow is for otter tail load to be connected back to MISO transmission sources. So as we connect our load back to the MISO system, we would thereby get rid of those additional SPP expenses. These particular projects have been identified, but they have not been included in our current filing because, again, of the ongoing discussions with the parties. Our commitment to move forward on these is really subject to where we land with these other parties. And until we get some clarity there, Otter Tail is not willing to commit moving these forward until we get that clarity from these ongoing discussions.
So does that mean that if you get the right deal worked out, you will not need these projects? If you don't get the right deal worked out, you'll need these projects. But either way, whatever you decide should be the lowest cost to Otter Tail customers.
Exactly right.
Okay.
It could be one, it could be three, it could be zero.
So then my question to you would be, why don't you just build them? Because if you get that much uncertainty, you build them and you can get ROE on them. You own the stuff. You reduce some of the future risk from SPP.
Yeah. Sure. It's a fair point. Yeah. And one of the items that we'd like through our ongoing discussions is the certainty that if we do build these, that we would be completely insulated from additional costs. That's one thing we're hoping to achieve through our settlement discussions.
Okay.
That is our position, yes. For the central power load connected to the MISO system, yes, we would expect they would still pay that MISO tariff service. But again, that's subject to these ongoing discussions. Yep. Slide 19 is three additional future projects that we've identified through our planning process within Otter Tail. The first project is in Montreal County on the far western edge of our service territory. we are looking to establish an emergency tie with Montreal Williams Electric Cooperative out near Partial. We'd like to add a new transformer at Partial to help serve our load in the event that our primary source is out of service near Minot. The cost for this project is around $500,000, and discussions are ongoing with the parties to see if we can get this project moving forward. We have two other projects in western Minnesota I'll also point to through the course of our planning process within Otter Tail. We have a Clearbrook Area 115 project that's been identified. This involves the construction of approximately 18 miles of 115 line with a new 230-115 kV substation. And this is intended to address some reliability concerns during contingencies within this area. We have been in discussions with Minn Kota Power Cooperative in this particular area, and Otter Tail's portion of this project is estimated to cost around $11 million. Through the course of our joint planning, we're expecting to have this project in service in 2019.
Is it going to come in for ADP on some of this stuff or what?
I think it's probably to be determined at this point. I don't know if we have a firm answer at this point. I don't know if Stuart has any other comments on that, but.
Yeah, I guess as the project gets, developed and finalized, certainly that would be considered.
Do you really consider that when you have a tracker you can just float it into?
Well, certainly if commission desires to see and look at these projects and
right,
you know, assess the need.
But is there at what point does that, do you guys decide to make that happen? Is it directed by us? We say, we want to hear about that one ahead of time, or there's a dollar amount that's a threshold. What, because I haven't heard that ADP discussion on transmission for a while.
Well, and I was thinking back to the CapEx lines, that the CapEx, the commission, we held off on making our determination until MISO determined cost allocation. And when MISO said these projects are eligible for cost allocation, then we granted the ADP because we knew that it was a certain bookend, if you will, for Otter Tail customers. These would be probably all reliability projects. So either we have the discussion in a true-up or we have the discussion early for the need. So I just throw it out there because you're right, Julia. This is the first time that we're dealing with a lot of money here.
Well, and in the true-up, it's a little different discussion because
the
investment's made. So if we say, that one doesn't wash, then what? That puts you guys in a tough spot.
Certainly.
I guess when that's one of the, concerns about trackers and these, rolling investments, $6.4 million North Dakota revenue requirement. It just provides a mechanism to just continue rolling these costs in, and doesn't seem like there's a point where we have a lot of say in whether it makes sense or not, especially the MISO things. I mean, those costs literally were rubber stamping. There's no, I don't know at what point we have a say in those.
In the early processes, is my one vote or our one vote out of the members, that's
however many,
yeah,
right,
but that's our say,
and that's right. Not on the main committee, that's the advisory committee that goes to the main committee,
right?
OMS.
So in this filing, they're requesting a new project ahead of time, so it's kind of like an ADP, but the new project Rugby to Harvey, that's not in there at all. As part of this filing, they're asking that they can add that project into this. Mm-hmm. So
all three of these then? Mm. Or not?
Not
no,
this.
These
None
aren't
these
being
projects
potential.
Are,
these are potential.
These are just
possible
things future, right, down the road.
So that is the mechanism that's set up for this, and that's for all transmission projects. Is that what you're saying, Jerry?
That's the way we've been doing it, is that they get approval with their filings to put new projects into the tracker.
Yeah.
But we're dealing with some pretty big numbers, so there might be more. That's why we did this today, to get everybody thinking about it again. And so when we get to these real big numbers, that maybe we just need to do the same thing but have a little more time, a little more detail. So I think that's just to cue the discussion up.
Because, I mean, this is a lot of money. Because we might need, I mean, I guess if we'd need more information, then we would ask for more information, too.
But yeah, well, I agree with everything that's been said. I just want to throw out so that to balance the discussion, the flip side of it is, I don't think every single thing should be coming to us for ADP either. The company is supposed to make responsible decisions and then come in too. But I don't know where the line is, so it doesn't provide you much guidance. But certainly for real big things, that's why we have the ADP process. But I don't want to take over management of the company any more than you want it.
But to Jerry's point, though, I mean, this is the process to do that. So we do this again as these projects get closer. Expect we should just schedule more time to do some of this.
You know, in this case, this Rugby to Harvey project, it's a $1.5 million project. It's not a big deal, really.
Right.
Although we just spent 9 months in a rate case, it ended up being $2 million. So let's temper that.
2.6,
right? Anyway, good discussion.
Yeah, and the intent here is to just give you a heads up on future projects
that
could be coming here. So
that's what you get for heads up. Note to self, no more heads up.
No more heads up.
And I guess, you know, just quickly on the last project, it's another 230 kV project with Minn Kota that we're considering. This is a little further out in the time frame, but yet another large expenditure that we're forecasting out there in this 2019 time frame, starting with an eventual 2024 in-service date. But this project will actually allow for a new 230 source up into a 115 network that's becoming stressed due to the load growth up in northwest Minnesota. So. But I'm positive you'll hear more about that in the future. So with that, I'll turn it over to Carrie to talk through the...
When they get to those 230 kV, they can't be classified more than reliability projects? They can't be a multi-value project?
Right. Under the current construct of the MISO tariff, MVPs would have to be 345 kV or higher.
Okay.
So in this case, it would be reliability and...
Let's make it bigger and get it an MVP.
There is
it wouldn't be $28 million.
So there is a push right now coming from MISO and others.
Of course, that cuts both ways, but then there'd be other projects in other areas do the same thing and come back our way.
So the push from MISO and others now is to lower this 345 kV voltage thresholds to get MEP projects so that the cost is allocated throughout the, like our zone one.
Yeah, and, so be careful there.
We are resisting that at this point. if they want to do that, they need to rethink their cost allocation is our thought on it.
Thanks.
We wanted to just briefly reference the complaints that have been filed at FERC that seek to lower the approved return on equity on MISO-approved projects, which would relate to our TCR. And the first complaint was filed in November of 2013, and it seeks to lower the rate of 12.38% to 9.15%. And the current status of that case, it's been through hearing. The matter is with the ALJ, and we expect an initial decision by the end of this month. And a final FERC decision, however, wouldn't come until probably the fall of 2016. And that period that's relevant for any potential refund is November of 13 through February 15. It's not stated here, but there's a second FERC complaint that was filed in February of 2015, very similar arguments seeking to lower the ROE. And the status of that case is that it has been set for hearing in February, so that's just around the corner, with an initial decision due in June of 16, but a final FERC decision would be sometime out into 17. And the relevance to the filing, of course, is that given the uncertainty of these proceedings,
Projections we've made, and in the TCR, we've used an 11% ROE. And that is just to acknowledge the possibility that FERC will lower that ROE in these proceedings and to mitigate the change or the what would have to occur if we have to reconcile that in our TCR and to basically reduce the amount of step change, I think was the term that was used. And also, I'd point out that we have noted in our quarterly filings at Otter Tail Corporation that the power company has been accruing for a potential refund liability. So we are setting money aside each quarter for this possibility, and we just wanted to point this out. And I understand there has been a conversation or conversations with Mr. Lean where this has been raised, and it was viewed as at least not unreasonable to try and address it now as opposed to wait later and leave that 12.3% in.
So that kind of goes both ways too, because they're getting money back from MISO on the money that they've put into the MVP projects, and so they're getting a 12.3 whatever it is percent interest on that, and so that could get dropped down to the 10 point something that's being looked at in this case now. And OMS has been filing comments in this case too, supporting the lower ROE comments.
To kind of wrap things up, what was included in the initial filing, we have a revenue requirement summary on this following slide. And on the slide, we show what was approved in last year's filing for a 2015 revenue requirement, what actually took place with updated costs, and then what the proposed 2016 revenue requirement is that we asked for in the initial filing here. You can see the difference between last year and this year is about $1.7 million from the initial filings. Oh. And as Jerry had mentioned before, about $480,000 of that is a true up for under recovery that has occurred in 2015. I should note as well, in the initial filing, we had included a customer notice that it, for a customer, residential customer using 1,000 kWh in a month, would be about $1.57 per month is what the impact would be. So to summarize, the what we've got here is we're the initial filing, we requested that the commission approve the update of the costs, the actual costs, and the update of forecasts. That includes the three projects that we highlighted here today. Also include request to include the Rugby to Harvey 115 project, and then kind of an important one, I guess, that we had spent some time on here today already was incorporating the new items associated with Otter Tail load expected to be an SPP, that we'd incorporate those changes in the 2016 annual filing. And that's, I guess, up for at what point maybe this comes before the commission. If new information became available on November 28th, or, I mean, when timing-wise, what makes the most sense of when maybe we would want to do a supplemental filing? And so your guidance on that would be helpful for us. At what point is a
an SPP figures it out. When you finalize with SPP, that seems appropriate.
But are you saying if you could still do it yet this year and change it for this year, then we could, before we approved this, have an updated amount? That's what you're saying, correct?
That's correct. Correct. I guess what we're requesting is that we leave it as is from the initial filing, given the net difference between what we know today and what we knew on August 31st. Right now, those are the best numbers that are available, so maybe a supplemental isn't necessary.
So are you saying, because we already know it's gone down, So you're saying we should go on your August numbers?
That's what
and then
we're requesting.
You,
knowing we
versus
have an
you could go today, you could update it, and already there would be a decrease.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or you can keep that until next year and update it.
Correct.
Right?
Or somewhere in the middle, keep it till you final out and do thing in March or something.
Well, if something were to settle out at that point in time, you know, as next year's the true up, you know, for 16, that would be factored in to the numbers that would roll into next year's filing. Any over or under collection,
right.
You know,
you would
be.
You would just wait and do that next end of
right.
next year.
Right. The other thing is let's say this is not going to get scheduled to go before the commission until the middle of December. Let's say we do, you know, have some material changes that come about from some of the discussions that Jason, you know, alluded to earlier. We certainly are willing to and would look to, you know, make a supplemental filing if those changes do materially change this. We want to try to keep the tracker, you know, balances as close to zero as possible. We don't like to see these big true ups, and so. So, you know, from a scheduling perspective, as far as when, you know, you believe you would put it on the agenda, you know, that will give us a little bit of a window of time that we could, you know, address some of these things if it worked out.
How long do you need in advance to make the changes by January 1st to implement the updated rates?
From my perspective and the ongoing discussions in the SPP matter, I think we'll know a lot more by the end of this month. Now, in terms of turning those numbers over to these guys for the filing, I'll leave it to them.
Well, we would. Our final meeting is currently scheduled December 16th. That's not to say we couldn't have a special meeting, but there isn't a whole lot of time between that and Christmas, and then, you know, schedules get pretty nutty there. But we've done it every year since I've been on the commission. So, and I think it might have been for one of these riders last time. I guess I'd like to see a true up so that it's as close to accurate as possible. Assuming you already know some of the changes and there's probably more coming.
If we're to make a decision in December, how much ahead of the end of December do you need the decision by, though, in order to carry it out in January?
We would know the, you know, what the final numbers would be, and they would be submitted, you know, several days ahead of time, you know, before the end of the month. I think we've had our rider approved, you know, like on the 30th, 29th or 30th a couple of years ago, and rates went into effect,
okay,
you know, on the 1st. So we've been through that. We can deal with that. So I think just make, you know, we'll keep the dialogue open on where things are at. Like Jason said, we'll know by the end of, or we'll hopefully know a little more by the end of November. I guess what I'm hearing, we can plan to do a supplemental, you know, in early December, you know, to even address what we know today,
sure,
if nothing else does change. And then if we do know more, you know, we can roll that in at the same time. So.
Perfect. I think that sounds good.
I had one question, Bryce. You said something about $1.57 per average customer. We had 87 cents per customer. Did we just use the wrong numbers?
I think maybe 750 kWh per month.
Yep.
Would be probably the what?
What did you say?
I use 1,000.
Okay, I just want to make sure I was square on that. All right.
Yeah.
I have nothing else, Madam Chair.
Okay, so do you offer up your testimony today for the record?
You do. Yes.
The unofficial record. The.
It's an official. It's an informal.
Informal hearing record. Okay. Excellent. Thank you. Any other questions? Randy, closing comments?
Just thank you. This is very good.
Good. Yeah, I agree. This is helpful, and always to throw those transmission issues out there for us to digest is always a good thing. So thanks for coming out. Appreciate it. We will that concludes our informal hearing. Thank you.
We'll go grab our motion.
Yeah.
Feel free to spend some money while you're
in town. Thanks, guys.
So what are we doing next?
Just a motion that we didn't get.
For setting some?
Thank you.
Thank you.
You guys heading right out?
That's in here. Do you want to save it someplace?
If we'll just leave it up, I think you could save it without your thumb drive. Right, Steve?
It's never fun to be.
You can just save that without his thumb drive, you know, right?
Yeah, sure. You ready for round
two? Round two.
Yeah,
round two.
Can you hear the business?
Can you got to change.
Can I turn the projector off?
I'll just wait for you to
save it. Can we just save this in that file number that I had in 2014?
No, I can't.
The website.
So, Christian,
I
love
the SVP
guy.
Yes. Okay, this is the main camera?
Yes.
Very good.
Select that.